Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You know how everything seems like a good idea after you've had a few? Yeah, that's this show. Riding in my car, and I'm listening to the radio. It's time for Dukes and Bell.
Oh, someone told me it's the Black Beverly Hills. Is that true?
Driving in Atlanta just got a whole lot more bearable.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Hi, everybody. Carl Dukes and Mike Bell. The names that mean goodness.
Say my name, you know who I am.
Carl Dukes.
I dream and I know things.
Oh, don't question my authority, thanks.
King Kong ain't got on me.
Sometimes you just gotta call somebody, and I'm not ashamed to say it. You know,
And Mike Bell.
I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you.
Hope you guess my name.
Bring a pitcher of beer every 7 minutes till somebody passes out, and then bring one every 10 minutes, right?
Get ready for the best 5 hours of your life.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, sir.
Don't believe me, just watch.
This is Dukes and Bell.
You know what? Why don't we start doing the stuff that other guys have done on other radio shows around the country?
No.
On Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Atlanta, happy Labor Day. What's going on? It is Dukes and Bell on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey, man. Glad to have you listening. If you are chilling at the house or however you're accessing the program today, we know a lot of people off and hanging with the family. Some people making their way back to the ATL. Mike, and it's a big sports weekend. Always is right around Labor Day as the college football season gets underway, and obviously the NFL this week. Guys, we are the countdown's on. We are 3 days away from finding out what our Falcons are going to be, what maybe they're going to look like, and a big a test against the Philadelphia Eagles, who, of course, are the world champs. So we're going to talk plenty about that and get that conversation started leading up to Thursday's game, which is heard right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Pre-game, the Wade Ford tailgate, guys, starting at 4:20, Mike, 4:20, and then the pre-game show at 6:20, leading you all the way up till 8:20 kickoff. So we'll be all over that over the next couple of days and talking plenty about it. How was your weekend, man?
It was great. I was just showing Randy some of the photos from his old stomping grounds, the 9-5 folk, and I had a great time down there. The final weekend, Carl, of the Summer of Mike, my 50th birthday. We believe we've wrapped it up for now, but a lot of fun, and ran into a couple of Falcon fans on the flight back from Fort Lauderdale. Very, well, a little nervous moments this morning. There was a tropical storm which is kicking up. It's named Gordon, and now it's going to make its way over to the Gulf of Mexico. And unfortunately, leaving this morning, about an hour delay, is the pilot's like, I don't know if this ever makes you feel good, or maybe the pilot should maybe not say this. And he goes, well, we're number four for takeoff. We got a few guys ahead of us. They're kind of trying to figure out if they're going to take off or not.
Don't want to hear that.
That's a little unsettling. So there'd be like bands of showers, and so you have to wait, and you can see the wind kick up, and then the planes would take off. But anyway, we all got here, and Delta, because you fly Delta jets, no worries.
Yeah, I've always dreaded, and it's happened to me a couple of times, if you fly enough, it's going to happen eventually, which is, you know, you get stuck on the tarmac in those storms where they're hoping that the storm's going to pass. But this thing's so big, it would have been hours. But, you know, you get stuck where they don't want to take off, and so you can't get up. They serve no drinks, and you can't use you for the most part. You're not supposed to get up and use the restroom.
Right.
And I've been in that situation where you're sitting in the plane for 2 hours on the tarmac before you even take off, which is the worst. So at least you got up. You're here. That's good news. And, yeah, they're keeping an eye on that storm, man, which they think is going to turn into a hurricane.
Well, the Hurricanes got hit by a storm called LSU last night. We'll talk plenty about that in the college football report. But, obviously, Georgia looking good, Tech looking good, everybody hitting all the numbers that they need to hit on that first week. And, obviously, for Georgia and to a lesser extent with Georgia Tech against Alcorn State. You know, it's kind of their exhibition season. I know the games are for real, but let's keep it real. We knew that Georgia was not going to be challenged by Austin Peay. But what was your biggest impression, man? I know I didn't mean to bust your chops, but boy, oh boy. Real quick, Carl and I were really hot on Tom Herman when he was the Ohio State offensive coordinator. who obviously shepherded three quarterbacks through a season on the way to a national championship. I said, well, this could be a maybe outside the box hire for Georgia. Well, boy, are we glad they never did that. And obviously went with Kirby. Because Tom Herman, I know it's only a year in a game, but boy, oh boy, it doesn't fit the eye test.
Where's the genius juice for the offense? You know, we used that term when Kirby came over and we said, where's the genius juice? We've seen it. Kirby's got it. He's recruiting at a high level. His team's ready, prepared to play. His kids are responding. It's completely opposite of what you're seeing right now at Texas. And, you know, listen, I'm not going to linger on this, but the fact of the matter is year two is the year where coaches take the jump. Even look at Kirby Smart.
Right.
Okay? Go back and look at Nick Saban in year two at Alabama. Go back and look at, coaches like Urban Meyer in year two. And I use Urban, not at Ohio State, but even when he was at Florida. The point is that's when the program elevates. After that first year when a coach comes in and there's a transition from, all right, we're going to weed out the players that we don't want. We're going to make sure that everybody's on the same page. You get your coaching staff in. And you should win with the guys that are there. And then as you move forward, like Kirby is doing right now, right, you start to bring in the guys you want. And at Texas, that's just not happening for Tom Herman. 2 years in a row, I'm not going to say an embarrassing loss because a lot has happened with Maryland and the loss of a kid there. And certainly the emotions were running high, but you shouldn't lose to Maryland. And the way that they've lost the last couple of years, Mike, sloppy play, penalties,
right,
dumb plays, it just doesn't add up to Herman being ready for that job.
Yep. Chip Kelly's start with UCLA gets off to an inauspicious start. They lose to Cincinnati. And last night watching Miami, I think a lot of things that, you know, we did talk about here on our show is that, you know, despite the hype, and certainly everyone's loving Miami and the turnover chain and all that, they have lost four games in a row now. Right, go back to the Pitt loss, which got things kind of screwed up with Rozier at quarterback. Clemson smokes them in the ACC championship. Wisconsin beats them in their own house. And now they lose. And by the time they can finally figure out the passing game, it's too little too late in the fourth quarter. And LSU, despite not having a dynamic offense, I think they've got some obvious room for improvement. That just blew me away to look up and see 33-3. And the U just, I mean, typical Mark Richt. Bad special teams, undisciplined play, fracas before the game, completely out of their skin.
All four of those losses you're talking about, double-digit losses. You're right. Richting? Were they richting last night?
They're richting a little bit.
Were they richting? Because that's what a guy hit me up on Twitter. We invite you to follow us across all social media platforms, guys. 92.9 The Game. He is at Mike Bell, ATL, and I'm at Put 'Em Up. See Dukes, the radio show. Dukes and Bell, 92.9. Yeah, listen, it looked familiar last night. Not at Miami. It looked familiar in years past for Georgia coming off an offseason where everybody says, oh, they're going to be good.
High expectations.
And they roll into the first game, and you go, what the? That's what it looked like to me last night.
Whether it was Oklahoma State or Boise State.
That's right.
It had a signature Rick-ness to it. And if you didn't see it, they started talking that jive right before the game, getting after it with the LSU guys. And I feel like some teams, that's their swagger, that's their edge, that's how they get fired up. But you saw the targeting pattern. Now, I'd hate to see anybody get hit, but Miami loses one of their defensive players with a targeting shot. You had a ton of penalties, and you had punters that couldn't punt. So, I mean, it's always, when we were here talking about Richt at the end of his run, those are the same things over and over, and it's amazing to see it happen again, at least in this game against LSU.
404-741-0929, guys. That is the number for you to chime in, as well as our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line here on the program. It is a Monday. Yes, it is a holiday, but as we said, there is a lot going on. Braves take 2 of 3 from the Pirates over the weekend. They're currently taking on the Red Sox. We'll keep you updated throughout the course of the afternoon on that as Tookie Toussaint. Tookie time! Got the start today. So we'll keep you updated. Braves, again, still in the mix, man, when you talk about winning this division, still leading the division after an impressive two games over the Pirates over the weekend. As far as the dogs, let's talk about this real quick, and we're going to get more into it as we go into the afternoon. Austin Peay's Austin Peay. I'm not going to disrespect Austin Peay. This is what we expected, Mike. I expected the dogs to be dominant. I expected them to play the way they did. And I was telling Randy McMichael, dog for life, who said he thought there were some things that he was watching for that maybe most fans weren't, but I said I thought the way Kirby managed the playing time with everybody I thought was good. But with that said, it still just looked like Fromm has more control over the offense than Fields. And I don't know if it's a fair statement because people are going to say, well, he didn't play as much or he didn't. When you look at it, it was almost equal somewhat. Right. Now, Fromm was very productive. But when you look at Fields, you know, TDs, 3 of the 4 drives or the 4 series he was in there, they go score touchdowns. So people are looking at that and getting excited, and they should. Mm-hmm. But from to me, okay, 12 of 16, 157 yards, 2 touchdowns. I just thought he had more command over the offense. And Maybe that changes as the season goes on. But remember, Fromm's a guy that stepped in, went through. He is an experienced college quarterback now. Fields isn't. And this is his first time stepping on the field in the college uniform. And I got to tell you, it looked a little bit like that. I'm not dogging the kid out. I think Fields is going to be special, but I could tell that Fromm just seemed to have more control.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a year under his belt. I mean, he was a highly touted QB. Look, I'm just saying Fields, we were talking about this on Friday's show. Fields is going to be the starting quarterback for Georgia. Might be at the end of this season. It might just be. We'll see. I mean, one game, you know, as you said, you touched on all the things. He's getting a feel for it, pardon the pun. But I do think there's just so much more upside with him. And, again, if it's Fromm and they can find a way to get the talent on the field each game, that's awesome. And everybody's happy and the results are there. That's great. But it's certainly good to see Georgia not even struggle for a second. There's some other teams out there, as we said, that can have a rocky road. I mean, look at Penn State. They had to sweat it out with App State up there in their own building. So, obviously, that's a different level of competition because App State's a perennial champ in their level. But good to see Georgia do it. How about Auburn, by the way? It wasn't always pretty.
Best game of the weekend, but, I mean, thought. Great. That and Penn State. Yeah. I thought those were two best games of the weekend.
Great defense and, obviously, I mean, creating turnovers. When the Huskies are about to go in for a drive, get in the red zone, Auburn makes plays. So, that's look, their defense is always there. That's their calling card now. You got Jarrett Stidham. That's why you and I like Auburn to maybe win the West.
Yeah, Washington, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda. I thought they blew too many chances, moving the football, not having a chance to put it in the end zone. But you got to give credit where credit's due. Auburn's defense did step up big with big plays when they needed them. And if you missed it, 21-16 in Mercedes-Benz Stadium, I thought that game had the makings of, you know, both teams realizing what was on the line.
Right.
It's the first game of the season. It felt like a little playoff game to me. I mean, it was like, hey, Washington realized you win this game, it might catapult you into that next stratosphere where everybody's thinking you're going to run through the Pac-12 and maybe get into the college football playoff. But Auburn guys, and here's the kicker now, they beat a very good Washington team that could easily win the Pac-12. And then you look last night and you go, and I said this all offseason, I don't know what LSU is. Okay, I may know what LSU is now. They have a capable quarterback. I'm not going to tell you he's a superstar, but a capable quarterback who can make some plays with a very good run game, Mike, and a good defense. They could now, all of a sudden, people are going to look at them and say, all right, it's obviously Alabama, it's Auburn, but is LSU going to be in the mix in the West?
Well, I still don't trust their offense just yet. I mean, they got a great defense as well. They settled for too many field goals. And remember now, they brought the old OC back that was replaced by Canada before Canada got the heave-ho. Canada, by the way, was the coach calling the shots for Maryland as they beat Texas. But, yeah, we'll see how LSU does. Last year, the Troy game was, you know, a train wreck. But after that, they got things on track, and they've had a nice run if you swing that momentum now into this season.
It is Dukes and Bell. We'll come back. We'll hit some headlines. We'll hear from our coach, Dan Quinn. It is game week, guys. Falcons-Eagles Thursday night.
And we know who the quarterback for the Eagles is now.
Yeah, I told you guys. No secrets. Once that was announced, it was immediately out there. And more about what went down this weekend in the college football world on Dukes and Bell.
Complete preseason coverage.
This year's different, and this team is different.
Our Falcons play here. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
You know, Mike, we were talking about Miami. The U! And here's the thing last night. And if you don't follow that team, you may not realize this as they got blown out by LSU. And these Dukes and Bell guys, happy Labor Day. But they were one of the best defenses in the country last year. Seven returning starters in 2018. All right? When you look at the statistics for Miami, the U from last year, they led the nation in sacks, turnover chain, right? Third in turnovers. Fourth in tackles for loss. They got embarrassed last night. So the idea is, well, Miami's not that good. Maybe the offense isn't, but the defense was supposed to be stout.
Yeah, but I mean, you still, is there a bit of a reality check here? I think people got hyped up about Miami. We talked about it at the start of the show. They have lost four games in a row, right? They lost three games to end that season. That's not a hot team. All right, I know they're returning. And Rozier, this is the thing you and I talked about. Rozier's a guy, and he showed the good and the bad last night. I know late in the game, when the game was way, way over, he threw unbelievable rainbows down the field and got them down the field like that for a touchdown. But do you really trust all the offensive pieces? And at LSU, it was the same kind of story. You know you have great defense. Is how quickly is Joe Burrow going to become a playmaker? Is he going to be a game manager as quarterback? You know they've got a stock of great athletes there.
Yeah, I just think when we saw what LSU was able to do last night, that wasn't a team with two returning starters. It was a team that was one of the best defensively last year. that didn't live up to it for whatever reason last night. They got run on. They got thrown on. They pretty much did what they wanted to do. I'm talking about LSU's offense. But Mike is right. And now you're wondering where this season may go for Miami. Now, they'll bounce back. They got a cupcake this weekend coming up. But as far as the ACC pitcher is concerned, because that's the main thing, are they going to be better than Clemson? What I saw last night, the answer is no. Hey, man, it is Dukes and Bell. We got a lot to get to. As we said, we're keeping an eye on the Bravos as they are playing today against the Red Sox. Start of a three-game set against the Red Sox.
Right, and no score as of yet, but Evaldi gets knocked out of the box. His pitch count got high for the Sox. We'll keep you abreast of that. One thing we hadn't touched on, and we're going to talk about it all day. We got a lot of stuff. It's a five-hour show, but when you come in and there's all these headlines that broke, what was your first reaction when you heard that Khalil Mack got dealt to the Bears?
I was shocked because you don't give up a premier player in his prime like this. If Khalil Mack was a few years older, I might not have been as surprised. Now, did they give up a lot? They did. When you talk about getting two first-rounders and a third, you know, for Khalil Mack, but we are talking about the 2016 Defensive Player of the Year. We are talking about a guy that has over 40 sacks in the, you know, since coming into the league. This guy's been an all-pro at both linebacker and defensive end. It's the first time anybody's ever done that in the NFL. This guy's special. So I was shocked. I'm not going to lie. You give up that talent?
Well,
I don't know.
And here's the thing about John Gruden. And Carl and I don't speak for you, but I like Gruden as an announcer. I think he's fun to listen to. Some people feel like he gets a little tired, like Madden did at the end. I like the quarterback camp. I like his interaction with players coming out to the draft. But one thing you got to remember, he's never been a personnel guy. He thinks he is, but he's not. Rich McKay built that Super Bowl team and the playoff teams that Tony Dungy had before Gruden got there. And the fact that Reggie McKenzie was prepared to ride this out, just like Aaron Donald and the Rams, you ride it out. And you just laid it out there. This guy's all world. You developed him. You drafted him. You know, you've got the control. It was going on before Gruden got there. But the idea that Gruden's like, well, we can't go on like this. That's why you did that. And the other rationale I heard, Carl, I was crying laughing, is you can't have two max contract guys or two of the highest paid of their position on one team. Well, talk to the Rams. You know, we'll see what they're going to do. Other teams, and look at us with Matt and Julio. And certainly with more guys we've got to take care of. It just – Gruden's explanation made no sense to me.
No, it didn't, Mike. And listen, we will see very quickly here. Meanwhile, the Bears with Roquan and that linebacking core they've assembled, I don't know if it's this year, but, guys, that's going to be a force to deal with. And now you got to play Aaron Rodgers. What's the best way to get after Aaron Rodgers? Pass rush, right? Linebackers that can run and make plays. I think the Bears are all in, and here's the other part of this, and we'll get more into this in our NFL Blitz segment coming up in about 30 minutes. In today's NFL, when you have a rookie quarterback that can play, and they believe Trubisky can play, okay?
Right.
But we saw this with Russell Wilson. We've seen it in other places. The Rams are in it right now with Goff. If you believe that guy can get you there while he's still in his rookie deal, you can pay everybody else.
Right.
Because you don't have to pay them the 25 or more million that you're going to have to pay him. So the Bears right now are in that position, Mike, where they go, rookie quarterback, we think he can get us there. Mm-hmm. Put these other pieces around him, and let's go get a hell of a defense. And they've done that.
And they got a second rounder goes from Oakland to Chicago to help him out a little bit. But you're right, two first rounders for the best, one of the top three defensive players in the league. You know, 40 and a half sacks in 4 years, and that's, as you said, in a division where you got to get after the QB, including Kirk Cousins and Rodgers. So there you go, buddy boy. Here we go. They say you can never go home again. Joe Gibbs couldn't go back to Washington, and maybe Gruden can't go back to the silver and black. We'll see. It's going to be a ridiculous situation.
Yeah, I just think, and I'm not going to say the game's passed him by, but when you take this amount of time off, right, when you're Gruden and you go back to the league, I don't know, Mike. We'll see how it plays out. Guy's getting $100 million, by the way.
Yeah.
Gruden is.
10-year deal.
It's Dukes and Bell. Let's hit some headlines.
Strap in, youngins.
Hitting the headlines with Dukes and Bell.
Let's hear from Dan Quinn as we talk football as the Falcons get ready for their opener on Thursday. Coach Quinn talking about what a matchup this is going to be.
Let's talk offensively, you know, finding ways to get runs against a good 8-man front, you know, the way they play downhill and get on the edges. For us, at our best, having to defend the whole field. And we've got some tough matchup, as they do too. So that's what kind of makes, I think, both teams, the trenches on both sides, you know, are equipped and have their stuff together, both offensive lines, both defensive lines.
You want it, Nick Foles. You got Nick Foles.
Yeah, you said there's no way that anyone's going to keep their mouth shut. If you remember Doug Peterson last week saying He's going to know, and no one else will know until 90 minutes before kickoff on Thursday. But Carson Wentz, and you kind of knew it. If you heard the – Carson Wentz really didn't sound confident about being on the field. And he, give the guy credit. He's, at least he's – you can read. If he's a poker player, he's got some tells. You can really get the vibe that Wentz knew he was not going to be out there for week one.
So we know that. But here's the deal. He beat us when it mattered most, Dukesism. Last year when we needed to move on in the playoffs,
right?
Foles got it done. So by no chance, Mike, am I going into Thursday night's game going, well, I'm so glad we got Foles. Can we get him out of his rhythm, coach?
If he plays and gets more than a third of the snaps in a game, $250,000 bonus. If he wins a game like the Falcons, another $250,000 in the bonus language of the contract. How genius is that, by the way?
Well, listen, I think he knew, his agent knew, that maybe Wentz would not be ready at the start of the season. There was a chance he may get four games or so. And then, God forbid, if Wentz is not able to play. I think it is a genius move by him. Dan Quinn also talking about setting up the run game. Guys, offense has to be better this year.
Oh. Last year, I thought Tev had some runs in the game that looked good. We didn't run it quite as well as we liked, but we know that's a big part of what we do. It kind of marries up on, you already know this, but the play action, you know, the keepers that go along with that, that's what makes us so difficult to defend.
Yeah, Tev was working in that fourth quarter, and your offensive coordinator forgot about him once you got inside the 10-yard line. I mean, it was something that was there to be used there in the goal line situation.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's see if they use both of those guys. I'm talking about Devontae Freeman and Coleman in the backfield together. Mike and I have been saying this for the last couple of years. Maybe we'll see more of it this season. Hey, guys, and we're going to break down every day something about this game that we think is important, because I think this start of the season for the Falcons is as important as the middle or the end of the season, because you could potentially be playing the Eagles again in the playoffs. And you don't want to have to go back up there. Meanwhile, you just mentioned Doug Peterson, their coach. He says, I'm not giving away anything.
Yeah, a little bit. I'm trying to win a football game. And I don't want to put my game plan out there for everybody to see it and read it. And teams can scheme. And it just doesn't make a lot of sense, you know? So I appreciate it.
I hear you, man.
All right, coach. Sure you don't want to tell us what your first 15 scripted plays are?
You know, I'm telling you, I think Philadelphia can turn anybody into an animal, because Doug was a sweet – I mean, he's still a football coach, he's a football player. He's a lot sweeter last year on his way to the Super Bowl. Man, Philadelphia meeting it under his skin.
Hey, man, Braves are playing, but it was a good series over the weekend. Mike, we got good Julio Teheran.
That's right.
I mean, he's kind of, I don't know, kind of maybe reinvented himself over the course of the year, and it's good timing, too.
Julio, how did you feel after that start over the weekend?
My last four starts, I've been feeling really good. I've been feeling that I have all my pitches, and I think that's been the difference. I know every time I walk, it's like a score run, but just putting that on the side and trying to make pitches and, you know, batting the game, that's been the biggest part, and I was able to do it today.
That's it, man, because, you know, you hit the ball and the ball goes over the fence for the other guys, that's bad. When I hit the catcher's mitt and the bat does not hit the ball, that's what we call in baseball good or bueno.
That's true. Ronald Acuna is bueno. He ties.
And that's how you respond. No doubt about it. Lead off homer off the facade of the second deck. Wow.
You can say that again. He ties Marquise Grissom's franchise record for leadoff homers in a season. Here's the kicker, though. Acuna's done it in 41 games. Grissom led off back in 1996. It was 157 games. That call courtesy of Chip Carey, Fox Sports South. We'll keep you updated on what's going on today. So a good weekend, and let's hope the Braves can continue to do it, because, guys, now we are in September.
Yeah, the only thing that didn't go well for Atlanta sports fans this weekend was whatever that was up at Audi Field in Washington as a United fall 3-1. We get down 1-0. Jeff Lerner ties it. Barco had arguably his worst day as a member of United. Missed a wide-open goal and then also creates a penalty kick, free kick, and or I should say a PK. So just I didn't get a chance to watch the whole thing. I'm looking forward to talking to Jason Longshore and get his take, because all I was able to watch is like the five-minute capsule on Atlanta United. But everything I'm reading from the fans and talking to people is just lethargic, some bad turnovers, and just overall sloppy.
Sloppy's the word. They didn't look like they were completely there. Missed time passes. Mm-hmm. It was. It felt like the rhythm that we normally see was not there.
And DC's got. And DC United has been much better now since they've gotten to their home digs, kind of like how we were when we got to Mercedes last year.
More to come on Atlanta United, guys, as they fall. The interesting thing is when you look at the standings now. New York City Red Bulls.
Yep.
Points. They lead us by one. We'll get into it a little bit more. Let's hear from Kirby Smart after the Dawgs pick up their first victory. Talking about, you know, listen, they're going to play a tougher part of their schedule coming up.
We'll play better teams. Let's all be honest. We're going to play teams that have more talent. So we've got to be able to execute at a higher clip and not have some of those games were 2 and 3 yards that might be lost yardage plays against somebody else. We can't have those negative plays offensively. And then defensively, we were soft on a couple runs where they got 4 or 5 yards. We can't do that. We can't live in second and mediums and second shorts in our conference.
He's right. And Kirby's basically saying, physically, I expected us to play and dominate the way we did. Are you doing that against Bama or Auburn or Miss State? I mean, he's right. So I don't even know if you're doing that against South Carolina this weekend. Physically, you're just better than teams, and you saw that this weekend with the Dawgs. Hey, the Dawg Report coming up at 4 o'clock. We'll hear more from Kirby, more from Jake Fromm, DeAndre Swift. It was a good day for the Dawgs, no doubt about it, but we really get a chance to see what they're about this weekend.
Roddy DeBalzi is going to join us, by the way, give us his take on what's going down out there in Athens. By the way, Saban, we talked about it briefly. We'll get more into it later, but what do you think about Saban? And I know that we talked about it with Randy and Rick at the handoff, but coaches get asked prickly questions. You think they got to not be the first part of prickly when they answer those questions?
Let me ask you this. The day we had Coach Saban on at SEC Media Days, when he came to see us, Mike, how many times do you think that particular day he had been asked the quarterback question?
Right.
And we asked him. He didn't go off on us like that.
You knew how to play it, though, because you're an entertainer, man. You're a talk show host. You slow rolled him with a question about his wife.
Yeah, but Maria didn't have that kind of time. Here's the deal, though. He tried to shut it down last night. He did apologize for those folks who don't know. Right. And if you didn't hear it, we'll let you hear it with Marie Taylor, who does an amazing job. I think she's got a star in the making.
Right.
But it was interesting to see how Coach Saban reacted. Hey, coming up, Gene Deckerhoff,
the voice of the Florida State Seminoles. Talk about what's going to happen down in Tally tonight. Va Tech against the new look, the Gulf Coast offense, and Willie Taggart. See what Gene has to say about the Bucks as well.
Falcons football has returned. Catch all the action here live.
We got a hell of a division that we're going to go fight for.
Our Falcons play here. Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
It is Dukes and Bell. Happy Labor Day. Yes, we work Labor Day because coming off of a big college football weekend, lots of stuff happening. And we want to talk to you guys, and certainly we want to find out what Gene Deckerhoff is thinking because tonight's a big one, Mike. Florida State, Virginia Tech.
Yeah, the Willie Taggart era begins in earnest, and a guy has been there for, forever, over 4 decades. The voice of the Seminoles, the voice of the Buccaneers. It's one of our favorite guys. Gene Deckerhoff joins us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. And how excited are you for the new look Seminoles, Gene?
Hey, Carl, I can't wait till I stole the line, but till Towhead's Leather. It's 8 o'clock kickoff tonight. It seems like it's taken forever for this day to go by. You know, you try to sleep in a little bit, get a few extra winks, so you laze around, you read the newspaper, you know, and it doesn't even get to noon, you know, and then finally noon comes, and what's it going to be, 1 o'clock, you know, the wait, and there's no football on TV on Monday. I mean, come on, you got to sit around and I guess read the news and do stuff like that. I did a few chores, got the barbecue grill ready for my wife. She's going to have some friends over for the game, and took care of a few things around the house. But I'm ready for some football, fellas.
I am too.
I watched football Thursday. Obviously, the Bucks played the Jaguars, played them well in the first half, not the second half so much. Then Friday night, watched some good football. Saturday afternoon, evening, and then last night I tried to watch Miami. I thought Miami might play a little better against LSU, but. Then today there's no football, so I cannot wait until we get that game underway tonight.
It is Gene Deckerhoff, guys, and you heard it. I mean, he is the guy for the Noles and the Bucks, which we can kind of do a two-parter here. But obviously tonight we've had a chance to talk to Willie Taggart on the show. Do something. We love the phrase. What are they going to do? Give us a little bit about Taggart.
Hey, Carl and Mike, the hashtag do something is almost a trademark for Willie Taggart. But last night it was hashtag did something. He and his wife, Tanisha, pledged $1 million to the Unconquered campaign that kicked off last night, trying to raise $100 million for Florida State Athletics. So already it's hashtag did something. But Willie would be the first to tell you, hey, I haven't won a football game yet. So there may not be a more nervous individual within a radius of 400 miles of Tallahassee, Florida, than young Willie Taggart, because he's done everything the right way. He brought Bobby Bowden back to practice. He rehired Mickey Andrews, who had retired in 2010. He is an assistant to the head coach, a great defensive coordinator at Florida State. He's done everything right. He's brought the Heisman Trophy. I think two of the three Heisman Trophy winners. Chris Winkie is working at Tennessee now. He's an assistant coach. But Charlie Ward came back, and Jameis Winston came back and spoke to the team in the spring, and Derek Brooks, Pro Football Hall of Famer, came up and talked to the team. He's trying to get that tradition instilled in this football team, and he felt like when he looked at this football team when he became the head coach, he felt that was missing, and he wants to bring that back. Now, I promise you this, Jimbo Fisher probably knew every win that Florida State had against Florida, Miami, and bowl games. I mean, he was a tremendous historian when it came to Florida State football. But some of the players didn't get back involved in the program, and that's exactly what Willie is. Willie wants this team to feel like they're the dynasty era of Seminoles that won 10 or more games for 14 straight years. Nobody's done it yet since then. Alabama's close. They're like 10 or 11 in a row. But he wants to bring that tradition back into that locker room, and I think you're going to have more of a team commitment by this Florida State football team. That's what I see. That's what I feel when I'm around these guys and I watch them practice and I watch them, work out and get ready to play. This is a team, and I think sometimes you get away from the team. I don't know how Nick does it with all that NFL talent he has playing for him at Alabama. Right. Those guys are thinking about one thing. I'm going to cash that big paycheck after 3 years of playing here at Bama. That's on their minds. I think Willie's trying to bring back, hey, you're in college. Enjoy the moment. Have some fun. Play winning football, and that's what he's brought back. And I can't wait to see this Gulf Coast offense, fellas. I mean, I'll promise you, there will not be a delay of game penalty on Florida State this season. I'll promise you that.
Yeah, it was a bit pedantic, Carl, at times, watching Jimbo's offense. I can't argue with the results of the championship. Gene Deckerhoff is with us here on the waitfor.com hotline, the voice of the Seminoles and the Bucks. Gene, you saw from the broadcast booth, DeAndre Francois, I mean, that guy took so much punishment the year he made it through his season. And obviously last year he goes out against Bama. He gets named the starter. He's got a grasp of this offense. How difficult, how easy was it? Because the Jimbo offense was apparently very complicated.
Yeah, and sometimes, you look back at the recruiting process. DeAndre Francois out of IMG grew up in Orlando, played early high school in Orlando. But he came out of high school as, a top prospect, number one or number two, depending on what service you look at, dual threat quarterback. Jimbo's offense was not a dual threat kind of offense. He wanted his quarterback to learn the pro system, make your reads 1, 2, 3, 4 and step back in the pocket, feel comfortable in that pocket. And sometimes that's a square peg in a round hole, so to speak. But DeAndre, he learned the Fisher offense, obviously. He took us to the Orange Bowl his redshirt freshman year. He was the offensive rookie of the year in the ACC. He passed for 3,350 yards. You say, okay, so what's 3,350? That was the fifth most passing yards in the history of Florida State University. That's an awful – and he led every freshman by far that year when he started before he was injured last year. So, yeah, he brings the big and you hit it right on the head. Hey, Carl, Mike, if you watch – you go back and watch videotape of Florida State versus Miami, the one that was won in the last minute when Miami had the point after touchdown block that was going to take it into overtime. Right. I call that wide block one. That's I'm sticking with that story. But you look at the beating he took. He had to come out and set at least one, maybe two series,
right,
and then came back in. And somehow, some way, threw a game-winning touchdown to Dalvin Cook on a wheel route down the left sideline. That game may have been the biggest beating I've ever seen a quarterback take and continue to play. But he's a tough guy. He suffered that knee injury. He was tackled from behind, and I think there was a little extra twist to that leg after that tackle was made. Not going to point fingers, but that ended his season last year. Unfortunately, it did not end his career. He's if he's not 100%, he's 99.5%. He feels good about himself. He feels confident in the reconstructed patella injury that he had, and he's ready to lead this football team back to the promised land. He feels like he can lead this team to a championship, and I think that's why Willie tabbed him as his starting quarterback. Remember, James Blackman started every game last year except the Alabama game, and he suffered the slings and arrows. We finished 7-6, but it wasn't all James Blackman's fault. That 7-6 season, I think it's sort of a hiccup, and I don't think we'll see a 7-6 for a long, long time around Tallahassee for under Willie Taggart.
Gene, how good is Cam Akers? I know the kid broke all the Florida State freshman records that were set, I think, by Dalvin Cook. Is he better than Cook, in your opinion?
Well, you go by numbers, okay? He had 1,024 yards rushing last year, and Dalvin did not reach 1,000 in his rookie year. But then again, Dalvin did not start his freshman year until the Syracuse game. He'd had some carries, but he did not start until after the Syracuse was about midway through the season. And then after that, he reeled off several 100-yard games. I think he came close to 200 once. But Cam Akers, remember this, that was his first year playing running back. He was a quarterback in high school and recruited by everybody as a running back. He's got the size, about 220 pounds, 6'2", 6'3". He's a man carrying that football, and he's very fast. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. He can run the football. If there's a knock on him, maybe trying to block, because quarterbacks in high school never had to block. That's mm-hmm. very obvious. But he's picked that up as well. And this Gulf Coast offense, mm-hmm. those running backs are not going to have to block. They're going to touch the ball very quickly. They're either going to run a wheel route. They're going to run a little slant to the sideline, a bench route or something. They're going to get the handoff and run the ball. What Willie Taggart has had in his 8 years as a head coach, and I don't know if this is a stat, but it's in the notes, and it, to me it sort of stands out. He has always had at least one 1,000-yard rusher. He has five running backs that he has available starting right now tonight, including Cam Akers, five that I believe have the potential to reach 1,000 yards. Not all together, right. But any one of those five could be a 1,000-yard rusher, in my opinion. Cam Akers is number one. Jacquez Patrick is number two. Between the two last year, 1,772 yards. If you get that tandem going, you can get 1,700 yards out of your top two running backs. You're going to win some football games.
It's Gene Dekerhoff, guys. Always great to catch up with the voice of the Seminoles and the Bucks with us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. Florida State taking on Justin Fuente. Bud obviously going to have something up his sleeve defensively, Bud Foster, in that lunch pail defense for the Hokies. While we got you here, though, Gene, I don't know how much you get to see of the Buccaneers. I know you're trying to have fun during your offseason, but Jameis, obviously not going to see him for the first three games. Bucks made some moves free agent-wise, and they made some trades. What do you think the Bucks are going to look like this year?
Well, I think we're under the radar, and that's probably good. Thank the Lord there were no more HBO hard knock cameras around one Buccaneers place this year. I mean, good grief. I think we started reading the headlines, if you want to know the truth, and that's very easy to do. And, you know, all of a sudden you're a star on television. Boy, everybody's talking about hard knocks, and boy, we sure took it upside the head last year, big time. Buccaneers in Atlanta mid-October, mm-hmm. play Atlanta the last game of the season down at Raymond James Stadium. If the Bucs could win one of the three games that Jameis is suspended, I predict very good things for this Tampa Bay franchise. The Buccaneers looked very good in the first quarter against number one teams in the preseason. For what that's worth, okay? I know it's preseason, but the pass rush. We have not had a pass rush for 3, 4, 5 years. In fact, we may not have had a pass rush since we made it to the Super Bowl in 2002. But I really think the pass rush will be a much, much improved. Jason Pierre-Paul, in the trade with the New York Giants, I know he's played in the league for 9-10 years, but he still has that motor and that want-to get to the quarterback, and I think he's good for 9.5, 10 sacks. I really do. But what general manager Jason Light and head coach Dirk Cutter did not realize when they traded, they knew they could get some sacks. They knew they had a guy that still had the potential to get, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11 sacks in a season. He just got a quick step off. He's strong. He's very, very smart when it comes to playing that position. But what they didn't think they were getting was a guy that would take his team out there and practice. In the heat of 100, 105 degrees and 100% humidity, he's leading all these young guys out there in defensive drills. He's a team player. It's very obvious. And we've had some busts. Every team in the NFL has some busts, but we brought in some guys over the last 2 years that we thought was going to answer. I say we, but the team thought was going to answer our needs on defense, and they just didn't. All I know is they didn't live up to how much money they were making. I'll promise you that. But I think the acquisitions, free agent acquisitions, Vinnie Curry from Pittsburgh, Bo Allen from Pittsburgh, they have Super Bowl rings. They know what it takes to be a champion. Vita Vea, I didn't have a chance to see him because he was hurt the entire preseason. Suffered an injury the very first week of preseason practice. Boot was it was a walking cast. And I did not see him play. Now, he was a 350-pound nose tackle. We drafted him with our first-round pick. Maybe he could be a run stuffer. Because you got to stuff the run. You got to stop the run to have any chance of getting to the quarterback. But I think the defensive line will be vastly improved. I would not trade our three linebackers for anybody in the country. Drafted two young cornerbacks that, by golly, look really, really good. Second-round draft picks, one out of Auburn, one out of North Carolina, that looked real good when they played in the preseason. So I think that we have the makings. You know, last in passing yards allowed, last in quarterback sacks, 22. We had six quarterback sacks, fellas, against the Jets. Take that one game. And the Jets weren't very good last year, by the way. This just in. But we had six against the Jets. Take those six away. We had 16 sacks in the remaining 15 games. It's tough to win in the NFC South if you can only get 15 sacks.
Right.
In 16 sacks in 15 games. So our pass rush is better. I think our backside's going to be better in the secondary because we'll have depth. And now let's get Jameis. Jameis had a phenomenal preseason, by the way. He'll be missed for 3 weeks. He can't be around the facility, as you know. He can't communicate with the team. I mean, he's off limits for 3 months or 3 weeks. But when he comes back, I think that he'll have a point to prove. He became a father on July the 4th. He's always been determined. I saw him in college. I've seen him in his pro career. I saw determination on the face of Jameis Winston, and I can't wait till he's off of that suspension and back and call him. He'll be ready for the Falcons when we come up to play you guys in mid-October.
Guys, that is Gene Deckerhoff. Gene, have a great call tonight, man. Enjoy.
Thank
we look forward to
wait,
hearing it. All right?
Okay, touchdown FSU.
Thanks, Gene. Always love hearing the legendary voice of the Noles. And again, if you're just tuning in, we broke down Florida State talking about the Hokies tonight. And then while we had him on the horn, we said, see what he can tell us about what's going on with the Bucs.
Falcon fans, tune in to 92.9 The Game 2 hours before every Falcons game for the Bud Light Countdown to Kickoff. Mike Conte, Hugh Douglas will preview the Falcons matchup, get you ready for some football. Countdown to Kickoff is brought to you by Bud Light, Game Day's favorite light lager. It was a deal that went down over the weekend, had everybody going, huh?
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.